Hello, it's Debbie back again for the first Wednesday in October, the 5th, 2016, reading from the e-edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. Starting locally from the front page, St. Mary's Chaplain blesses pets. Part of the paper has all God's creatures and wonderful pictures of dogs and people making nice with dogs. Decatur. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital chaplain, the Reverend Nick Hussein, has said the blessing of the pets to a lot of animals through the years. But on Tuesday, he experienced a first. As Hussein walked around the crowd gathered with mostly dogs near St. Mary's Cancer Care Center for the fourth annual blessing of the animals, Wyatt House approached him with a bag. Hussein looked inside the bag and saw a furry brown and white face sticking out. "A hamster," Hussein said. "This will be the first hamster we've blessed." Hussein then recited the blessing in honor of St. Francis, patron saint of animals. "Through the intercession of St. Francis, may God, the author of life and creator of all animals, bless you," Hussein said, then paused. "Max," House called out. "Max," Hussein, "with good health and long life, be a source of constant joy and comfort to your guardian, Tyler," House said. "Tyler," Hussein said, finishing the prayer. While the hamster was a first, it's not the strangest animal Hussein has seen. "There was a bird the second year, and I think the same year there was an iguana," Hussein said, "but it's mostly dogs. I inherited Gus when my granddaughter went to college," she said. "Grandma, you need a dog," Morse said, laughing, "but I like him. We love our animals. We always take them to get blessed." Jill York, facilitator for St. Mary's Cancer Care Center, had the calmest dog at the service. Wade, a 5-year-old golden lab, laid on the ground while the other dogs fought their owners for more leash. A couple late arrivals caused some commotion, nearly leading to the dog equivalent of a brawl, but Wade never moved. York's secret? A shock collar. "He's normally not this calm, especially around other dogs," York said. "He's a hunting dog. He has lots of energy, but I gave him a little jolt in the parking lot, and he's been really good. There was one cat in a cage." When Hussein blessed it, he said, "I know you love water, but despite splashing holy water on hundreds of animals, most of them not caged, he's never been bitten." "Not so far," Hussein said, laughing. "St. Francis has been good. There were snacks available at the service for people and pets, and participants were encouraged to bring dog or cat food to donate to the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center." End of that article. Going on to an AP article. VP candidates clash in Virginia debate. VP debate, a clash in defense of running mates. This is by Evan Halper and Noah Bierman, the Tribune News Service writers. Farmville, Virginia. Indiana Governor Mike Pence tried during Tuesday's vice presidential debate to staunch the damage from disclosures that Donald Trump may not have paid federal income taxes for 2 decades, insisting his running mate showed business acumen when he declared nearly a $1 billion loss. "He went through a very difficult time, but he used the tax code just as it's supposed to be used, and he used it brilliantly," Spence said. "Donald Trump has created tens of thousands of jobs." The statement came during the beginning of a surprisingly fiery debate between Pence and Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, the Democrat on Hillary Clinton's ticket. The pair, debating at Longwood University, frequently interrupted each other and accused their opponents of dishonesty as they argued over a range of topics, including foreign policy, the economy, taxes, the federal budget, criminal justice, and immigration. Pence at one point accused Kaine and Clinton of lodging an avalanche of insults, while Kaine accused Pence and Trump of running an insult-driven campaign. Moderator Elaine Quijano looked like a traffic cop for much of the evening, trying to keep the candidates from talking over each other and her. Kaine prodded Pence repeatedly over Trump's failure to release his full tax returns and mocked Trump for bragging during last week's debate that not paying taxes would show that he's smart. "So it's smart not to pay for our military? It's smart not to pay for our veterans," Kaine said. "It's smart not to pay our teachers? So I guess the rest of us who do pay for these things are stupid." I can't imagine how Governor Pence can defend the impulse-driven, selfish, me-first style of Donald Trump, he added. Cain called out Trump for demeaning Mexicans who crossed the border illegally, questioning President Barack Obama's birthplace, and lodging a host of other insults. But he also had to answer for Clinton, who'd been dogged by questions over fundraising, paid speeches, and the private email service she used as Secretary of State. There's a reason why people question the trustworthiness of Hillary Clinton, Pence said, and that's because they're paying attention. Cain said Clinton proved her trustworthiness by committing to help others before she entered politics, and he raised his son's military service to declare her fitness to lead the nation's armed forces. We trust her with the most important thing in our life, Cain said. The thought of Donald Trump as commander-in-chief scares us to death. But Pence was just as aggressive in attacking Clinton for failures in the economy and national security during President Obama's tenure. He accused Clinton of planning to stifle the economy with huge taxes and regulations. The American people know that we need to make a change, Pence said. We see remarkable portions of the world literally spinning out of control. Pence countered that Clinton helped start the process to cut a deal to halt Iran's nuclear program and worked in the Obama administration when Osama bin Laden was killed. The two clashed again when the discussion turned to law enforcement. Pence took aim at Clinton's and Cain's assessment that the criminal justice system is beset with institutional racism. Senator, please, enough of this seizing every opportunity to demean law enforcement broadly by charging implicit bias. Cain expressed incredulity at Pence's comment, "Those who say we should not be able to bring up or talk about bias in the system will never be able to solve the problem," he said. "I can't believe you're defending the position there is no bias." Cain then pivoted into an attack on Trump, reciting the GOP's nominee demeaning comments on Mexican immigrants, women, and war hero John McCain, the Arizona senator. If you want to have a society where people are respected and respect laws, you can't have somebody at the top who demeans everybody, he said. When the debate turned to immigration, Cain accused Pence and Trump of planning for a deportation force that removed 16 million people from the country. They want to go house to house, school to school, business to business, and kick out 16 million people, Cain said. Pence called the description nonsense. He said his and Trump's plan to strengthen the borders and aggressively enforce existing laws contrasts with the Democratic plan, which he labeled amnesty. They have a plan for open borders, Pence said. They call it comprehensive immigration reform on Capitol Hill. We all know the routine. It's amnesty. A strong performance by Pence was considered critical for Trump because of his poor showing last week and a series of controversies that followed, including his insults of a Venezuelan American beauty queen, the disclosure of a tax filing that showed Trump may not have paid federal income taxes for two decades, and the suspension of his charity foundation this week by New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Republicans were looking to the more disciplined and politically experienced Pence to shift the conversation to Trump's core message that the middle class and working poor have been left behind by changes in the economy. Trump had some early success in his matchup with Clinton last week when he hammered her for some of the economic policies implemented by the Democrats that he argued caused massive job losses. But he quickly lost any advantage he had gained as he strayed off message and into boastful tangents, personal insults, and interruptions. Trump's missteps on the debate stage proved costly to his campaign at a time he had come close to catching Clinton in the polls. She now leads by an average of nearly 4 percentage points nationally, according to Real Clear Politics. Clinton's position in battleground states also has improved, with a 6 percentage point lead in New Hampshire and a cushion of 4 percentage points in Pennsylvania. Trump, however, is far from knocked out. He leads in Ohio by nearly 4 percentage points and is within striking distance in Florida, both states he almost certainly must win to take the White House. 4 years ago, Vice President Joe Biden faced the same pressure Pence was to be under Tuesday night. Biden was asked, with reclaiming campaign momentum in his 2002 debate after Obama turned in a poor performance that year in his first face-off with Mitt Romney. "Well, it can't be a reset. It certainly can be a moment of rehabilitation and putting things back on track," said Scott Mulhauser, Biden's deputy chief of staff in the 2012 campaign. Pence and Cain are more traditional representatives of their party than Trump and Clinton. They are far less well-known than the presidential nominees and less divisive. Most conservatives turned off by Trump's unorthodox brand of Republicanism have put their faith in Pence, longtime social and fiscal hardliner, in hopes that he can smooth some of the Trump's edges, but his task is a hard one given Trump's dominance on the ticket. It'll be very difficult, said Michael Steele, a political consultant who helped prepare House Speaker Paul Ryan for his 2012 vice presidential debate against Biden. I don't think anyone has any doubt that Mike Pence is a consistent and committed conservative, and there's not really much that Pence can say to convince voters that Donald Trump is as well. Biden suggested Tuesday that in his case it helped that he was in lockstep with his running mate. Asked whether he had any advice for the debaters, Biden said in an event in Washington, "Think about whether you made the right decision." Biden then pointed toward the White House. "It could be a long day in that office over there if you don't agree with the president," he said. The remark was aimed at the substantial share of the Trump agenda that Pence has signed onto only recently, as well as the vastly different leadership style of Trump and Pence. Kaine has his own challenges, given the distrust many voters have in Clinton. Democrats have tried to highlight his personal story, including his missionary work in Honduras. Kaine, a former mayor of the state capital of Richmond and governor of Virginia, has been viewed in the Senate as a consensus builder with a keen interest in the intricacies of policy. That puts him in a league with Pence, who served in the House, where he championed small government and held strong opposition to abortion. End of that article. Moving on, to local sheriff's office preps for layoffs without sales tax increase. A headline on the print section says, Schneider, revenue necessary. Sheriff seeking increase in Macon County sales tax. This is by Ryan Voiles, a staff writer for the H&R. Decatur. A sales tax increase will be needed to prevent a number of layoffs within the Macon County Sheriff's Office. That is the message that the officials from the department and the county have started to push in the community ahead of a binding referendum on the November ballot that would impose a quarter of a percentage point increase in the county's share of local sales tax, also known as the law enforcement safety tax. The item, which will appear on the ballot under proposition to levy an additional retailer's occupation tax, would add an additional 25 cents for every $100. I would be remiss if I did not state that public safety in our community will suffer from these cuts, Sheriff Thomas Schneider said. If the item is not improved, cuts would include the elimination of 2 correction officer positions, 3 correctional sergeant positions, and 7 patrol duty positions. The latter would lead to the elimination of the department's school resource officer and detectives who work with the U.S. Marshals Service fugitive apprehension, drug interdiction, and narcotics efforts. It would include 4 layoffs and eliminating positions that are currently vacant due to lingering budget concerns, Schneider said. If the tax increase initiative is passed, Lieutenant Jonathan Butts said there would not be any layoffs and all but one of the positions would be filled. We could breathe a lot easier if this is approved, Butts said. We wouldn't be asking for this money if we didn't need it. Butts and Schneider praised the community for its charitable ways, and Butts said he hopes the public understands the role of the office and its efforts to help the community. The Macon County Board unanimously approved a plan last July to place the referendum on the ballot, with the idea to double the $2.5 million per year to cover the costs of operations of the sheriff's office and the county jail. It is not uncommon for counties to have a sales tax to cover public safety, as 40 counties across Illinois have a rate of at least a quarter of a percent to cover the costs of public safety, facilities, or transportation. As of this July, Clay, Moultrie, and Logan counties have a 0.5% sales tax to cover public safety, while Effingham and Champaign counties have the same 0.25% as Macon County. Peoria County has a 0.5% sales tax that includes public safety and public facilities. Macon County's current rate has been in place since 2003 and remains tied for the lowest rate in the state with 8 other counties that have a tax. Jersey County in the Metro East area has the highest in the state at 1.5%. Funding for the sheriff's office, as well as the state's attorney's office and court operations, have become stretched as personnel and inmate costs have risen, along with the need to upgrade equipment and technology. In addition, the effects of the Macon County Board having dropped the tax levy by $1.3 million in 2002 and kept it there for 3 years, has begun to be felt by various departments as each has been asked to cut up to 7% of its budget for the coming fiscal year that begins December 1st. With the request, Snyder has presented the county with a budget that cuts just more than $1 million from its budget. As the recent Decatur Limitless campaign has praised the city of Decatur and the county for a crime rate lower than its regional counterparts, County Finance Committee Chairman Jay Dunn said layoffs could cause a negative impact for the area. "We tried to help the county out when we cut the levy for 3 years," Dunn said. "I think we're at the point where we'll need to ask for them for their help." End of that article. Investment, it says. Tour starts opening for foreign trade possibilities. I'll repeat that. Tour starts opening foreign trade possibilities. The headline in the paper copy says, "Trade options entice nations to Decatur. Foreign dignitaries visit several area facilities." This is by Chris Lisvardi from the H&R staff. Decatur. A tour Tuesday of Decatur gave a group of foreign dignitaries a chance to meet with area companies with the possibility of expanding global trade opportunities. The Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County hosted representatives from several Chicago consulate offices for the tour that included stops at Caterpillar Incorporated, the Archer Daniels Midland Company Intermodal Ramp, and Fuyao Glass. I'm going to spell that. F-U-Y-A-O, Fuyao Glass. In turn, opportunities could be opened up for companies in other countries, said Ryan McCready, the EDC president. "Trade works in both directions," McCready said. "It starts with establishing a relationship. This is part of our effort for putting Decatur on the map globally for jobs, economic development, and foreign trade." The offices included China, Hong Kong, Mexico, Belgium, Hungary, South Africa, Canada, Ecuador, Philippines, Taiwan, Finland, Lithuania, and Macedonia. American and Chinese companies have a long history of cooperation, said Xiaoming Zhou, commercial counsel of the Chinese consulate in Chicago. Last name, Xiaoming Zhou, Z-O-U. "We see a promising future between China and the U.S., he said. "We hope to find more cooperation and opportunities to promote business." Darcy Monroe with the Canadian consulate was impressed by what the group saw in Decatur. "Everyone takes such pride in their companies, jobs, and community," Monroe said. "They represented the region well. Companies with operations in Decatur already have trading opportunities and connections with Canada," she said. "Seeing the operations could lead to ideas for future opportunities," Monroe said. "We start asking questions and all of a sudden the lights start going off," Monroe said. "We hope to build and maintain the relationship as it continues to grow." Martin Caro from Pro Mexico Chicago talked about the significance of the North American Free Trade Agreement as regions compete with other parts of the world. Caro spoke during a reception and dinner for the group at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. "We are competitive because we work together," Caro said. "We rely on each other's strengths." Caro said the consulate offices can be valuable resources for businesses when seeking assistance in connecting with markets outside the U.S. The group will visit Champaign today for tours of the University of Illinois, Research Park, Enterprise Works, and Blue Waters before returning to Chicago. End of that article. Okay, we're on to the local section, two crimes and courts, and then two articles that are a little more upbeat. Death of four-year-old girl ruled as homicide. This is by Huey Freeman, Decatur. A coroner's jury ruled the death of four-year-old Amara Reynolds was the result of a homicide. Decatur Police Detective Troy Ferries testified that Amara, who was pronounced dead August 31st in a hospital emergency room, had been physically abused for some time. She had scars, welts, marks on her legs, some new Some fresh, some were healing, Farish said at the inquest Tuesday morning, held in the office of Macon County Coroner Michael E. Day. There are scarring to the inside of both legs. It was determined that a form of punishment both parents choose for wetting her bed or for begging for things too much. The parents, Gerald H. Reynolds, Jr., 29, and Dalvon Taylor, 26, are being held in jail, awaiting trial in connection with charges related to the child's death. Reynolds is charged with two counts of first-degree murder. Taylor is charged with one count of endangering the life or the health of the child. After detailing more of the injuries, it concludes with saying, the girl's paternal grandfather, the landlord of the Reynolds residence, testified the family was moving out at the day of the child's death as a result of an eviction. The residents had no electricity due to non-payment of the power bill. The eviction was a result of the mother's brother living in the basement against express rules. He smoked marijuana blunts in the basement, kept a pit bull, and had trash all over the basement, the grandfather testified. Reynolds, who's being held on $2 million bond, entered a plea of not guilty Wednesday. His attorney is William Vig of Springfield. He is due in court November 21st for a pretrial hearing. Taylor, who's also entered a not guilty plea, is being held on a $250,000 bond. She has retained a Chicago-based attorney. Next, man found guilty of attempted rape of elderly woman. This is by contracting his name here, Huey Freeman of the H&R. Decatur. David McGee, a 37-year-old Decatur man, was convicted by a jury Tuesday of attempted aggravated criminal sexual assault for trying to rape a woman in her 70s after threatening to kill her cat, wielding a butcher knife, and trying to tie her up with duct tape. McGee is facing 4 to 15 years in prison, which will be determined at his sentencing hearing November 16th in Macon County Circuit Court. He was acquitted of a lesser charge, unlawful restraint. The victim testified she was living in the same residence as McGee at the time of the incident. Under direct examination by Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Lindsay Shelton, the victim said she was asleep in her bedroom about 2 a.m. on May 13th, 2014. I woke up. He was standing at the end of my bed with a knife in his hand, the victim testified. He didn't have nothing on. When he threatened her cat, she went into the living room. So, going on here, after details. In his closing argument, Assistant Public Defender David Ellison said there was no forensic evidence and the woman did not call the police after two incidents. There was no defense witness. Shelton argued that when police asked McGee why the woman would say he assaulted her, he said, I don't know, but whatever she said was probably true. I was very high and did some weird things. End of that. On to education. Ameren sparks career ideas. MacArthur students spend career day at Ameren. This is by Valerie Wells, another staff writer for H&R. Decatur, Gussie Reed started in the mailroom at Ameren, a temporary job 38 years ago. On Tuesday, she told MacArthur High School students visiting the Utilities Training Center that she's been with the company for 38 years. She worked her way up until she's only a couple of levels lower than the president. MacArthur offers a class in college and career explorations, and the students visited the training center to learn about the variety of careers available there. A week ago, we were in agriculture, food production, and natural resources, said Gail Bowman, who teaches the class. We look at those jobs and profile jobs and created a resume. People will have 6 to 10 jobs in their lifetime. What 10 things are you going to do when you grow up? We haven't been preparing students for the fact they're not going to graduate and go to college for just one job. They're going to be in a lot of different jobs, and we need to be exposing them to the breadth of those jobs. Electrical engineer Sherry Gary told the students that they have to realize that competition is stiff and starts much earlier than they realize. Being competitive needs to be in your mind, she said. Shoot for the top. Shoot for excellent. Be the best you can be. That means not just getting through a class, but aiming for an A, early as middle school. The top students get the top jobs, she said, because they've proven they're excelling that excelling is important to them and that they can learn. Nobody walks into a job the first day knowing how to do it. They have to learn the job, even if they have the training and skills the job requires. Jobs at Ameren include almost anything you can think of, said Tony Wilkins, Superintendent of Administration. Engineers who have degrees, such as Gary, field reps who are engineers without degrees, customer service representatives, public relations, linemen and mechanics, and everything in between. The jobs all pay well and can become careers. It's always going to be there, he said. You're not going to get laid off. People always need light, and it's something we're going to always need for everyday life. I think I would be very good at it. Damon Scogan said he liked the fact that some jobs don't require an advanced degree, yet he'll be able to make a good living. You can actually develop a skill here and branch out your abilities in other places, Corey Norwood said. If you want a high-level spot, you can go get it. You're out there and helping other people. End of that article. Local briefs for Wednesday, October 5th. Decatur, shots fired, investigated. Police said a Decatur man was very lucky to escape injury early Sunday when one bullet among a hail of gunfire passed right through his pants without hitting him. They're following up several leads as part of their investigation, and arrests are likely. Decatur, meth fire injures man. A man suffered serious burns Monday night after a methamphetamine lab exploded in a Decatur home. Police said they found out about the incident after the 24-year-old man showed up in a Decatur Memorial's hospital's emergency room with severe injuries. He was in stable condition Tuesday and is expected to recover. Firefighters were summoned to the scene of the explosion at 9 p.m. in the 900 block of East Harrison Avenue and found no active fire but saw burn damage to carpets and homes' interiors. Decatur, first responders' dinner. A first responders and family spaghetti dinner will be 5:30 to 7 today in Westminster Presbyterian Church on Main Street. A headline on the article on the local section says, Richland Community College students meet the candidates. Gathering gives boost to down-ballot races. However, this doesn't come on the e-edition, and it's not readable in its print fashion. Aha, just found a new feature on my computer. Here we go again. This is about the Richland community meeting with candidates. We'll finish this section two of the Decatur Herald and Review on October 5th. This is by Chris Lisvardi, staff writer. Decatur, with the presidential candidates getting much of the country's attention, Hal Volpe hasn't been sure what to think about other races in this year's election. After attending the Engage Your Government event Tuesday at Richland Community College, Volpe changed her thinking about selecting candidates in some of the local contests. She was among the potential voters getting a chance to meet with various candidates and local office holders and was particularly interested in having conversations with Macon County State's Attorney candidates Jay Scott and Dan Hassinger. They have a lot of control over situations that could affect Decatur, said Volpe, a first-year student at Richland. It changed my view on it, Volpe said. I wasn't sure if I would vote for either. Now, with more information, I'll pick one. Every vote counts, so I want to make sure to get mine right. Scott, a Democrat who's the incumbent, is trying to get the message out while meeting with residents about his record. Hassinger, a Republican who is challenging Scott for the second time, said he was encouraged to run again after continuing to see serious need for change in the office. Both candidates said they hope voters will be interested in their race, not just the ones higher up in the ballot. The event encourages students to become interested in the political process, said Kelsey Geist, president of the Richland Student Government Association, which organized the event along with the Office of Student Engagement. Among the attendees, State Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat Chicago, was invited by State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat Bunker Hill, to stop at the event and boost get-out-the-vote efforts. Early voting is already underway, and voters have important choices to make in contested national, state, and local races, along with several referendum questions. Macon County Clerk Steve Bean said Bean is expecting to see an increase in early voting as some voters are finding it more convenient than heading to polling places on Election Day. Bean said seeing students interested, some in their first election, is exciting, and they can become more involved in ways such as being an election judge. End of that article, and this will conclude part one of the e-edition of the Herald and Review, as read by me, Debbie, on Wednesday, October 5th. Talk to you soon.